Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
We've got some good news for you, and it comes to you from the Western edition of the old Farmer's Almanac, oddly enough. During wintertime, most of us are a bit depressed to look out the window or the windshield, as the case may be, and note that at this time, it's already past sunset. Well, the earliest sunset of the year comes at 4:51, and it happens on about December 7th. And although it's true the days are still getting shorter and will continue to do so till December 21st, oddly enough, the sunsets start later as of December 7th. Yes, that's right. A week from now, even though the days will be getting shorter, the sunset will occur 2 minutes later. So if you like the daylight and you're an afternoon kind of person as opposed to the morning person, this is good news indeed. We're proud to report here on Radio Parallax that two of our regular contributors are lawyers, UCD alumni lawyers, Stuart Gardner and Steve Alexander. That, of course, doesn't stop me from taking pot shots at the legal profession. And in keeping with our longstanding tradition on this program, I would like to cite an email that was sent to me last week, which pretty much comes in the, I think, only in America category. Dateline, October 1998. Terrence Dixon of Bristol, Pennsylvania, was leaving a house he had just finished robbing by way of the garage. He was not able to get the garage door to go up since the automatic door opener was malfunctioning. He couldn't re-enter the house because the door connecting the house and garage locked when he pulled it shut. The family was on vacation. Mr. Dixon found himself locked in the garage for 8 days. He subsisted on a case of Pepsi he found and a large bag of dry dog food. Mr. Dixon subsequently sued the homeowner's insurance, claiming this situation had caused him undue mental anguish. The jury agreed to the tune of $500,000. Is this a great country or what? You know, we've got 4% of the world's population, 80% of the world's lawyers. Do you think that has any relation to cases such as this one? Here's some news I'm positive you can't put to good use. Professor Yasumasa Kanada and 9 other researchers at the Information Technology Center in Tokyo, Japan, used a supercomputer for 400 hours and calculated the value of pi to 1.24 trillion digits. This smashed the old record of 206 billion places, also calculated by Dr. Kanada back in 1999, by a factor of 6. Now, is it just me or do you suspect that Dr. Kanada needs a hobby? I'm just about positive that NASA could round off pi to 10 decimal places, 3.14159265535, and still put the Voyager 2 spacecraft right where they wanted it, at Neptune. But isn't that the difference between math guys and science guys? If anybody at UCD's math department can explain why in God's name somebody would do this, please send us an email at info@radioparallax.com. We have a very special guest on today's program. Dr. Catherine Olmsted will be joining us in our second and third segments to tell us the very interesting story about Elizabeth Bentley, America's foremost female spy. And we note with some sadness on this program today the passing of one of the few geniuses that television has produced over the years, Rune Arledge. Passed away on December 3rd. The name may not be familiar to all of you, but I am pretty sure that anyone listening to this voice has been influenced by Rune Arledge. Does this ring a bell?
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
Rune Arledge was the man who shaped ABC's Wide World of Sports. Before that, he won the first of his 37 Emmys for producing the Sherry Lewis Puppet Show in the 1950s. It was Arledge who introduced state-of-the-art technologies to sports programming in the 1960s, including instant replays, slow motion, advanced graphics, as well as the introduction of journalistic values and the personalization of athletes to sports broadcasting. In 1970, Rune Arledge brought Monday Night Football to America, which 32 years later is an American institution. He revolutionized coverage of the Olympics, and under his guiding hand, Olympic coverage was superb. Rune Arledge was a thoughtful man, and his thoughtfulness would be translated into excellence in broadcasting, which earned him 4 George Foster Peabody Awards. Arledge saw how sports and news could touch people in ways that others didn't perceive. My favorite story about him came from an interview in a national magazine where Arledge told about his early days of sports broadcasting when, I guess in the late 1950s, he was covering a track event which was attended by both Premier Khrushchev and President Eisenhower. Arledge described how, as the high jumper leapt up to go for the world record, he had the rapt attention of everyone in the stadium. He leapt up, cleared the bar, which wobbled momentarily, but stayed on. At that moment, Khrushchev and Eisenhower, two old men who were ideologic enemies, swept up in the exuberance of the moment, jumped up and down, and hugged each other. Arledge said he turned the camera onto these two old men and broadcast that image to the viewing public. He said that he would never broadcast a more important image than that one, and I suspect he never did. And we have another obituary note to tell you about this week. On November 26th of this year, Ray L. Wallace passed away. Ray Wallace is better known to you as Bigfoot. And no, I don't mean the wrestler, and I don't mean the tire. I mean the large, hairy hominid of the Pacific Northwest. Wallace passed away last month at the age of 84. But back in 1958, Wallace had a brainstorm. Tired of his construction equipment being vandalized, he went out and put some 16-inch footprints onto the bottom of his boots, and he then tromped around the construction site. When word of these unusually large footprints got around, it drew national attention to Humboldt County, California. Apparently, fear of a large ape man kept vandals away from the construction equipment, but after which Wallace was fearful of coming forward with the true story about what he'd been up to. He evidently kept that secret for 44 years, and in addition to that, got involved with still more Bigfoot fakery. Now, people knew that Ray Wallace was faking Bigfoot evidence. He produced a film that really nobody believed. It was too fake. But, unfortunately for people who believe in the legend of Sasquatch, Wallace also told Roger Patterson where to go to take his now famous movie footage of what appears to be a large ape man striding across the countryside. That brief movie clip is not obviously faked, and a lot of people have regarded it as probably genuine. This admission, however, by the Wallace family casts some grave doubts on the possibility of this being the real thing. Now, either next week or the week after that, we're going to bring you a very interesting tale about Someone I'm acquainted with who actually went looking for Bigfoot near that Roger Patterson film site. And I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy hearing his story about what happened. The oldest senator in the entire history of the U.S., South Carolina's Strom Thurmond, is stepping down at age 100. Thurmond was famous as an ardent defender of the Old South. In 1948, he led a breakoff of Southern defectors from the Democratic Party. Then-Governor Thurmond ran for president on the platform of opposition to civil rights for the South's black population. In the 1950s, Thurmond authored an angry response to the Supreme Court's overturning of Plessy v. Ferguson, the decision that stated that separate facilities for the races was constitutional. The angry Southern Manifesto that he authored was an attack on Brown v. Board of Education, in which he adamantly opposed any relaxing of the segregation of the races. In the 1970s, Thurmond switched to the Republican Party, finding the Democrats' continuing support of civil rights just too much for him. At Thurmond's tribute last week, Senate Republican leader Trent Lott of Mississippi made some statements that raised eyebrows. Lott pointed out that in 1948, Thurmond took Mississippi's votes and that, quote, "We voted for him, we're proud of him, and if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years either." Now, Thurmond's campaign was based upon declarations such as, quote, "All the laws in Washington and all the bayonets of the army cannot force the Negro into our homes, our schools, our churches." His statement surprised many, so here now to clarify what he meant is Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott. Senator,
how can I help you, sir?
When you said that the country would not have had, quote, "all these problems," unquote, putting a segregationist in the White House in 1948, what did you mean?
Well, I was being respectful, son. I'm very proud as a Southerner to have served in the United States Senate with a venerable elder statesman like Senator Thurmond.
Well, Senator, Harry Truman, the man who defeated Thurmond and the Republican nominee Tom Dewey, once said that anyone who would call him a statesman, that a statesman was someone who was dead. He was a politician.
And your point is what?
Well, the point is, you know, I'm asking you, what about Senator Thurmond's history as a politician before he was your elder statesman, a history supporting segregation of people of different races?
I think you must understand that when I said we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years, I was not advocating a return to the segregated public transportation, bathrooms, or lunch counters, nothing like that, no.
You weren't?
No, not at all, no, sir.
Well, what were you advocating?
I'm just saying, some problems we've experienced over the years might have been avoided had the hand of a Southern gentleman been guiding our nation's helm.
And his guiding hand would have prevented what?
Well, we might have avoided using a federal troop such as jackbooted thugs. No armed soldiers would have descended on a Dixie to enforce ill-conceived Supreme Court decisions, for example.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Decisions inviting an open season to trample on our precious state's rights, boys. You know what I mean, don't you?
Okay, so how would black people have gotten the right to vote, attend college, and enjoy the use of public facilities?
Through an orderly process of reform. We're supposed to be a nation of laws, my friend, a nation of laws.
Which meant that black people would have gained their civil rights when? When hell froze over?
I don't think that's a funny joke. There's more than one way to skin a cat. That's all I was saying. And yes, I think Strom Thurmond would have been a great president of these United States.
As for your views, Senator, in 1992, you told the Council of Concerned Citizens, the offspring of the old White Citizens Council, that they were on the right track with the right principles and the right philosophy.
I am proud of the heritage of citizens south of the Mason-Dixon line. Make no mistake about that.
But you don't mean they were right on the issue of race?
No, I didn't say they were right on race, no.
So what were they right on?
Well, the CCC is a group that is right on a whole bunch of things. They like the reruns of Hee Haw, and so do I. And they enjoy your NASCAR, but who doesn't? And they're just possum hunting, pea picking, just good Southern cooking loving folk. That's all.
So they were right on things like black-eyed peas more than the race issue.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I will continue to say, as you reporters come around here squawking in a belly again, I hope a Strom Thurmond can live a good many more years. He's a symbol we can all be proud of.
Symbol of what?
Well, of longevity, of man's convictions, of his viewpoint. Strom was never a man to go running after some new cockamamie, new doggone fangled new idea.
Like integration?
Now, I did not say that, no.
Well, we know, but thank you, Senator Lott, for answering our questions just the same.
My deepest pleasure. I trust this has clarified matters.
I think it has.
Good, good.
Let's take a short break. You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. And do stay tuned for our most interesting discussion in the next segment with Dr. Catherine Olmsted about the Red Spy Queen, Elizabeth Bentley.